Hey, everybody. Just wanted to talk about a few things real quick before we started the show today. First of all, we have some tour stuff coming up in August. We're going to be in Philadelphia on August the 28th, which is a Friday night. So it's a fun, cool weekend time to come out and have fun with all your friends at the Gilmore Guys live show, a Stars Hollow town meeting. So that's going to be at the World Cafe Live Cafe. World Cafe Live. Tickets are still on sale for that. They're going pretty quick though, so go ahead and get those. And we have another show in Washington, D.C. on August the 29th. And tickets are going really quick for that. So go ahead and get those now. And you can find the links to all those venues and all the ticket info on our website on GilmoreGuysShow.com. So go to GilmoreGuysShow.com, go to tour, and you can find all the info about all the stuff. Now, about this episode in particular, two things that I wanted to address. For our last few live shows, which is to say the last three, because we've only done three and released them at this point, we have been less than good about explaining what's happening to the podcast listener at home. We've been a little bit too visual. We've done fashion things and just thrown the picture up on the screen and not explained what's going on. And we did that in this episode as well, in 416. We did that a little bit too much. So to remedy that and to get everyone on the same page, we are releasing a visual companion video to go along with this episode with 416. So if we did it correctly and didn't screw up, then you can find the link to that video in the description for this podcast, as well as we'll post it on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. And it'll be on our YouTube page. The second thing is, to me, audio quality is really important, and it's really important we make the best show we possibly can for all of you. And I feel like audio quality on this episode is less than what we wanted. It's not a disaster, but it's not great. And so I just wanted to apologize for that. That falls to us. We always try to make these as good as possible, but sometimes we make mistakes. And this time, the mix came out a little bit wonky, and it was, it just is what it is. It's not, you know, it's not a disaster, and I'm probably being way too picky, but I just want to caveat it with that. So you're expecting a disaster, and when you listen to it, you'll be like, hey, that's not that bad. He was really exaggerating. It's all fine. So just wanted to say that. Check out the visual companion. Check out the live shows in Philly and in Washington, D.C., and enjoy the show today. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do, because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com, I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download, like PDFs, music, or eBooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace. So you can figure out who's visiting your website and why, and figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm going to let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys.
We gotta sing along, we gotta do it.
What, for what?
It's so cold, it's so quiet in here. Here we go.
Live episode 416, the reigning lord,
we don't do this live often.
No, we don't.
You can't tell,
we're struggling.
Yeah!
Woo!
Welcome to Gilmore Guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Timmy.
And we are
the Gilmore guys.
Aren't we cute? Guys, thank you so much for coming tonight.
To our third ever live show.
Fourth ever live show.
As you can tell, we're off to a great start.
We did one here in April. Who was at that show? Who came to that show?
Yay! Back.
Who's here for the first time? Dear God. Mercy.
That's great.
Here's something I want to talk about real quick, because I just want to, we talked about this at the Austin shows.
Oh, did we?
Yes. Did we, eBay? Okay. We talked about the Austin shows, but I just really want to clear the air about
some
something.
Rumors that have been flying around.
So if you'll turn your attention to the screen.
Kevin is going to start every show we ever do from now on by showing you this picture of him clawing into Kelly Bishop's shoulders.
This is why I wanted to bring it up.
This was a surprise photo. She did not know this was being taken.
No, she knew. She wanted
Take a photo.
I want to clear the air. There's been some misperceptions about this on the internet. So as you can see here, I have not quite a hand, but like a man raven claw on both sides of her. That's because I didn't want to get my dirty fingies all over and like violate her or something.
You could have just stood behind her. You didn't have to.
Like just like, it would have been like.
Like a prom photo. Adorable.
Well, I would have to put my arms around
her. You'd just be like, Miss Bishop, will you take me to prom? And then she'll be like, of course I will.
The Gilmore Guys. Oh, that's one thing. She came looking for us to the festival. She's like, I've heard about the Gilmore Guys. I have to meet them. Everyone's moved by that. That's so nice.
Our heart was just as, like, that's the same reaction we had.
Yeah, she's like, I heard they were deeply funny, blah, 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 blah. And we got to talk, and it was good, guys. It was real good. But this was post. This was not her getting ambushed or paparazzi. We had talked for hours before. I realize I'm wearing the same shirt in both of these photos right now.
Kevin has three shirts.
And that's number one.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to clear the air. This was posed. She was in on it. Bishop is queen. We know that. Moving on.org.
She's the reigning.
We got a lot to talk about. I want to talk to the audience for a little bit first.
All right.
How many guys are here? Make some noise.
See, the men is what the show is about.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you guys came out.
It's all about bro humor. We're like Entourage in a way.
Right.
How many men are here of their own will, not dragged along by a wife or girlfriend?
Get the Arsenio meter clapping.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, I know the audience now. I feel good.
We know the men.
We gotcha. We got your number. So let's introduce our guest right now. Hit that beautiful guest intro music.
La la.
Sing it if you know it.
La la. Special guest.
Well, you know this gentleman. He's a previous guest on our show. He's written books. He's been in movies. He is where Marvel and DC meet. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for DC Pearson!
DC. DC. DC.
Great harmony.
Thank you guys so much.
How's it going? Thank you.
Do we sit? Do we stand?
We should just do the show like this the whole time.
Like the Blue Men Group.
Now let's take a seat. Let's get relaxed. Great. It's a town meeting. It's a loose, relaxed atmosphere. Or so I hope. DC, thank you for doing this again.
Oh, my pleasure.
For those that aren't familiar or may not know, DC watches this show specifically for the podcast.
Right.
We gave him the season 2 finale and he watched 43 episodes of the show just to do our podcast. So he's invested. He's a big time gilly now.
And like a lot of things in life, after I did that, I was like, okay, let me just like keep it going and I'll just like watch it at a sustainable, reasonable rate and because I enjoy it. And that way also, if I ever get asked to do it again, then I'll be all caught up and I won't have to like watch just a giant amount of TV like really, really fast. And I didn't do that. So for this episode, I it was like 3 weeks out, I was like, okay, time to start getting back into Gilmore Girls, because we had, my girlfriend and I had watched up through, she's seen the whole show before, but we had watched, we had sort of kept watching, and we had watched up through, like, I guess, like, the beginning of season three, maybe, and we sort of stalled out around, like, 307 or whatever, and you had told me then, like, you were like, episode 417, and I was like, oh, or 16, or whichever one this
16,
is.
16, my boy.
416, and I thank you.
Welcome.
That's very paternal of you. I appreciate that. But then I didn't do my sustainable Gilmore Girls watching thing. I just put it off until this weekend, and I told my girlfriend, I was like, we got to watch a lot of Gilmore Girls. And she was like, cool. It was like we were about to like drive across country really fast or something.
Yeah.
Like, strap in. We're about to watch a lot of a very likable, reasonably paced show. and so we did, but then I realized around last night it was either pull an all-nighter and watch this episode sometime around 5 in the morning and then come in and be like, my thoughts on this episode are, I'm tired.
That's what I do.
Is that true?
Yeah.
When did you watch this?
I watched this at 5 a.m., actually.
Oh, wow.
I was up all night, and then the thing is, I was like, I'm going to make the shirt while I stay up all night watching. And I made the shirt, and I was like, oh, what am I supposed to do? Oh, fuck. I got to watch Gilmore Girls. So I watched this episode, and then around 6, I'm like, I should go to bed. And then around 11 o'clock, I wake up to go to my job, where I'm supposed to be there at 8:30.
I feel
oh,
like...
Oh, no. So the real story here is you're fired.
Yes. The real story here is anybody knows anyone hiring.
This is all Demi has now is this podcast.
But I didn't end up doing that. I didn't end up pulling that all-nighter. And I have a 5-episode gap in my knowledge of this season. So I don't know about Lorelai's cybernetic arm. Right. When that got revealed, I was like, whoa!
Big arc in 411. Yeah. She gets a cybernetic arm.
No, I didn't. There's about 4 or 5. I watched the one before this one and then this one.
Okay.
But so I know that Rory is
dead.
A vampire. And dead. And came back as a vampire.
Yeah.
So that I feel a little disappointed and weird about it, and I had a lot of anxiety.
Are you okay,
but I think it's going to be okay.
Hey, okay. We'll not spoil the last 4 episodes for you.
Yeah, we'll not spoil what has previously come.
Right.
Tonight.
It's just about 416.
I feel like we're honoring the spirit of the show by watching it at the very last minute, because notoriously this show, the scripts came in at the very last minute, sometimes on the day of. So in doing this podcast, I think we should continue to watch it like...
Yeah.
5 in the morning, the day
like
before.
Like the minute before we record the...
Exactly.
The
and
beginning.
In some cases, the writers hadn't seen the previous 4 or 5 episodes.
Right, they're like, I think more, sure, why not? Well, we have a lot to talk about tonight, guys.
Yeah, we do.
And before we get into any pop culture stuff, I want to... this is quite a gift. A girl named Lauren on Twitter gave us every single WB promo for this show. So now we have all the promos from every single episode. And
are you sure she's not secretly the WB frog? In hiding in Brazil?
Oh, Michigan J, really.
Here are the promos here.
Yeah, Michigan fell on some hard times, guys. It's not funny.
He sold the trade secrets.
So let's watch the promo for this episode, 416, The Reigning Lorelai, and let's see how the WB marketed this show at the time.
Next Tuesday.
Grand-eyed.
What?
We have to plan this funeral.
I'm done with anything having to do with that woman. Want a drink?
They're a little nutty.
Wow, it's her name, but it's my name too. I delivered Grand's clothes, but I forgot underwear.
Grand's going commando?
All New Gilmore Girls next Tuesday on the WB.
The 2 clips they show of Richard are just him crying for split seconds. They're like, oh, he doesn't appear in this episode. Don't even worry about it.
You're like a 14-year-old girl in 2003. You're like, an old man crying twice? I gotta tune in.
Mom, set the TiVo.
I know, this is such a...
Mom, invent and set the TiVo.
This is such a weird episode that it's so adult. They must have had a dickens of a time promoting it. The Netflix synopsis for this episode is Richard is devastated when Grand dies suddenly. While Emily plans the funeral, she finds a letter Grand wrote to Richard begging him not to marry Emily. That's pretty accurate, right?
It is accurate. I wonder if that... Would you consider that a spoiler? The ending? Just the begging not to?
I would say the spoiler would be if they said, and then Emily loses her mind and gets drunk. And,
right. Starts smoking cigarettes
that'd
in the
be,
parlor.
Yeah, that'd be the spoiler.
Slash the best.
Slash the best, guys. We have a lot of clips.
Every scene, I just want to bad to the bone be playing. Like, as she's like daisy chaining cigarettes.
You're in luck! No, I don't need it. I'll do it next time.
Okay.
But let's get into it. How should we do this? I never know how to do this with the audience.
Because every time we do it, we don't clarify what we're doing, so we just go, should we do it? Cool.
Okay, so let's do Pop Goes the Coal. Sure, and then we all of us.
Don't you love a show where you have to memorize rules?
Guys, do you have it straight? Is that good? We good? Okay, so let's try it. And let's get into it with a low semi we call Pop
Goes the Culture.
That's the best we've ever done.
It is. You guys hit the high mark.
Yes!
Round of applause.
All right, so this is episode 416. This is where we take every pop culture reference in the show and put all of them together in a little supercut. So this is 416, Pop Goes the Culture.
Welcome to the dollhouse.
Can I Google it?
Okay.
I cannot believe that story.
Yeah, well, trust me, the Brothers Grimm were over in the corner yelling, no way.
This is the breeding ground for the next Jason Blair.
However, every time a certain relative of your father's comes to visit, things tend to disappear.
Dad's got a Winona in the family? How cool.
Kate Kaiser's a man.
Oh, well, his parents had an ugly sense of humor then.
Nigella just made a raisin cake.
I'm not gonna pull a Queen Elizabeth on you, make you wait around forever.
I'm sorry, can you say Stephen Glass?
Hey, I didn't know you were gonna be here.
Oh, yeah, well, the white rabbit ran by. I chased him, fell down a hole, and here I am.
I'd rather not have Tobey Maguire playing me in a movie about the Yale Daily News scandal. Thank you very much.
Okay.
No Westminster Dog Show, but please enjoy Charlie's Angel full throttle 24 hours a day. There, it's recording.
Oh. What did he have against Charlie's Angels full throttle?
What does anyone have in favor of Charlie's Angels full throttle?
Fair enough. All those checked out.
Wow. That's the worst of them.
McG just crossed appear on Gilmore Guys podcast off of his iPhone
McG's
calendar.
Like, well, I'm not staying for this.
He's here?
He's here.
Oh, we have tonight, McG. I wish. Here's one thing that struck me while watching these particular references, and then just Doyle, as played by Danny Strong in this episode. Doyle seems like an Aaron Sorkin character trapped in a Gilmore Girls show.
Yes, that's why he's so mad.
Like, he wants gravitas and he wants to be freaking Will McAvoy or whatever, but it's just like, it's just Gilmore Girls, so he's so frustrated and small. It's sad.
It is a fun idea for a character.
Yeah.
And I will give them credit for, like, having a whole new environment for the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like she goes to Yale, or he goes to Yale, and there's, like, a full-fledged, like, fun character, like, with his own premise, which is also weirdly tragic, because he's like, God damn it, newspapers are going to be a thing forever. And it's like, they kind of aren't even anymore 12 years ago, a little bit. And it's very touching, yeah. I think. And he was great on Mad Men. I think he was around in the first couple seasons of Mad Men.
He's also wonderful in Spider-Man's 1 through 3 as Spider-Man.
He's amazing in Pleasantville.
Oh, great Gatsby.
We all work for Danny Strong, you guys. Empire, if you guys haven't seen it, my God. Who here watches Empire? Very small crossover between
several
Gilmore.
Ghosts.
Several ghosts.
Empire cookie.
Oh boy.
My favorite.
Overall, okay. So this episode, I think the big draw here, just my personal experience with this. This is one of the first episodes of the show I ever watched. Back in 2004, I remember BitTorrenting this episode and replaying the Emily scenes over and over again and making my friends watch it because I thought they would find it funny.
And then printing out screen grabs and taping them to a wall with red string and
mm-hmm.
circling them and throwing darts at a dartboard with her face on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I said, one day I'll host a show about this on the internet, but it'll be a radio show, and that's my origin story.
Right.
Is this. I found it so compelling.
So it was one of the first episodes you ever saw, but that whole thing is kind of a riff on the Emily character, I feel like. It's like something that is way more enjoyable if you've had four seasons of history with that
Absolutely.
Character. So that's interesting that you came in with her being like sort of a boozy, devil-may-care broad, if I may say.
Oh,
well, she qualifies as a broad.
A broad
status in this
Well,
episode.
Let's take a look at this. This is, we'll play a clip. This is after Emily's found the letter from Trix saying she won Richard and Mary Penland Law, and then she loses her mind, and this is what happens.
I told Tilden to take the day off. Nothing's happening here.
I think every delivery boy in town would beg to differ.
What? Oh, those. Just put those anywhere. I have to finish reading The Crimson Petal and The White for my book club. Suki! What a pleasant surprise. What are you doing here?
I brought Suki so she could check what equipment she's going to need for the wake. And who the hell are you?
I'm so sorry, Emily.
About what?
Well, about Richard's mother dying.
Are you? Huh. Would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you.
Well, then, more for me.
A, watching these clips at the very specific angle I am under this giant screen here at the UCB Theater is terrifying. I can see why they chose not to broadcast the show as a parallelogram, but instead went with the more common rectangle shape.
That was a big debate at the WB at the time. Do we go parallelogram?
We're
going to
change the whole broadcast game.
The Palatino wants rectangles.
It's like, we're going to broadcast our show like the opening Star Wars crawl. Constantly receding away from the audience in a bizarre triangular-ish shape. And then the other thing is that Emily in these scenes is a squad goals gif waiting to happen.
Oh, very
hashtag
much so.
Squad goals, baby.
Get on it.
Oh, my gosh.
A delight.
An utter delight. This is obviously one of Kelly Bishop's finest moments. And when people ask her, and I know this because I talked to her about it firsthand.
Oh, boy.
Someone groaned.
When people, a.k.a. me.
So when people ask her.
Very specific form of narcissism to say people and mean yourself.
Right.
This... I think of myself in the plural often.
Not just the plural, not just the royal we, as everyone.
I speak for America, guys. Let's get into it.
Very Avita.
Oh, don't cry. When I asked her what one of her favorite episodes... You know what? I actually did not ask her. Someone else asked her, and I overheard it.
Fair enough.
Is she cites this as one of her favorite episodes. This is her quote-unquote... Tennessee Williams moment, as she says. She gets to booze it up. If you're familiar with the show, she's very straight-laced, very high-class, high-society, and this is her just letting it go and being a big boozy broad about it. And it works in spades. It's a bummer that episodes like this didn't get her an Emmy nomination. No one from the show ever got an Emmy nomination, aside from the makeup department, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. No acting. Because WB was...
Not to say that the makeup is particularly bad. I mean, everyone looks great, but it's not like they're having to do a lot of, like, elf ears or anything.
Oh, it's for the Festival of Living Art episode.
Gotcha, that was...
Yes. But overall, man, I'm probably biased, so I have, like, a particular affection and love for this episode because this is, like, what I grew up on. It really shaped my taste and love for the show because it's something I experienced very early on. But how did it strike you guys?
Well, I loved it, but I feel like the previous episode is what Emily should have been nominated for when she's, like, storming through the mall and, like, throwing a fit about... Spoilers.
I saw that episode.
Yeah, storming through the mall and not knowing what an Orange Julius is and all that stuff. I thought, for some reason, the West Wing Walk and Talk in particular was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if anything, that would have been the scene that would, like, submitted to the Emmy. What's not the Academy?
It's probably the Academy.
The Academy, though.
Who cares? I hope there's no Academy members here tonight.
Yeah.
But overall, this is great. This episode, it seemed like it was very light on the Rory stuff. It was just kind of an Emily showcase.
Right.
And a showcase for Richard's sadness. And of course, the passing of a great, great beloved character. Lorelai Trix Gilmore.
A very sad loss for the Gilmore world.
And for the television world. But, sure, why not? So, here's something. Demi and I both prepared a little something, but didn't tell each other about
it.
So we have two kind of similar things. So I'm going to play mine first, and then maybe we'll talk about it, and then we'll probably play Demi's and put a little spin on it. Was that vague enough? Was that a vague enough intro?
It's vague enough for me. I don't know what you're doing.
I hope they're tattoos.
Yeah, it's a tattoo. So Trix, this one's for you. We love you.
Mom, look who's here.
Who?
Well, look.
If I wanted to look, I would look. I haven't looked. Therefore, you must draw your own conclusions.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it.
You rented your house to Korn.
That's so cool.
They were fine tenants, took wonderful care of the place. They planted some lovely tulips in the front yard. I have no desire to spend an entire day with plants. Emily, I'm not a bee.
My mother's a very special woman, isn't she?
You talk about me like I'm dead.
Oh, you're never going to die. You're too stubborn.
Wow. One last ride.
One last ride.
I debated putting that on, but I thought that might
Trix
be
Trix would have loved Wiz Khalifa.
Now, should we go into your thing?
I think we should.
Okay.
I want to say a few words as this happens, just because Trix is one of my favorite characters. She means a lot to me, and I'm really saddened to see her go.
So, guys, get reverent. This is going to happen.
When we first met Trix, she was introduced as the third Lorelei, and in my heart, she was always the first. There's no second or third. It's just Trix, and it's sad to see her go because it means that she won't be lighting up our faces anytime soon. Richard is sad with the passing of Trix, and so am I. I just feel my heart has a great heaviness to it, almost sort of a thud. But it's weird, because it's all so weightless, like there's something missing. There's something missing from my heart, and that's Trix. And we're never going to see her again, and it really... it's a bit much. But I think that if there were anything I could say to Trix if she were still here, it's that we can't forget you. We'll never forget you. We know you, and we love you, and you're just... one of the greatest things that's ever happened to us. So even though you're not physically with us here tonight, Trix, you're here in our hearts and in our minds always. You'll never die with us, Trix, because you're far too stubborn. Rest in peace to Lorelei, Trix, Gilmore, Lorelei the First, in our hearts, in our minds, and in Star Trek.
I forgot to bring my spray-painted Venice Beach t-shirt of Lorelei Trix Gilmore.
Right.
That'd be so funny.
Her and Eazy-E at the crossroads.
Right. Oh, I should have put crossroads.
I mean, I don't want to tell you guys how to do your job, but sure. That
you should
great.
Have. It would have been way better.
She's the best. She is, I think, what you would describe as an old battle axe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That is the type of person that phrase was meant to describe.
Very much so.
Someone on Twitter asked me if I was glad that she died because of how much she hated Emily, and the answer is no. I don't wish death upon any of these characters, but especially too because of the dynamic, the very specific dynamic that she brought out in Emily Gilmore. She made her a little girl. She reduced her down to that very often, just like very little girl tendencies and weaknesses in her that she brought out. Now I sound sadistic. I love the weakness she brought out in Emily.
You're basically saying she's Bane.
Yes.
For Emily Gilmore.
Yeah.
Sure, I believe.
Bane Malaysia.
I shall die before I'm dead, you know.
Oh my gosh. So as the story goes, actually, you know what? I want to throw it to another clip. I hope this isn't too heavy of a clip show, but there's something we need to talk about. I'm going to set it up. This is when, after Trix has passed away, and they're going through her old things, and there is a revelation that is, I think, should change all of our minds about this show forever, and I really want to talk about it. So here we go.
You know, it's so weird. I know so little about Gran. I mean, like, what was her maiden name?
Gilmore.
No, her maiden name.
Gilmore.
Wait, you're not saying...
She and Charles were second cousins.
Ew, what?
Oh, don't act so scandalized. It was not at all uncommon for prominent families to keep the bloodlines close.
Keeping the bloodlines close? Is that what we're calling it?
Well, what would you call it?
Oh, I don't know. How about Good Morning Appalachia? I got a mighty cute sister and an extra set of toes.
No one has any extra toes.
I have a double-jointed thumb.
Remarkable. Use it to hand me some more papers, please.
The Gilmore girls are a product of... incest.
Guys. My cousin's danger all.
Guys. This is some Game of Thrones shit.
It really
the
is.
Gilmore girls are like...
Shame. Shame.
Shame.
Oh. Don't mind it.
No, that's... yeah. Not a good moment for anybody. This is crazy. Am I wrong? Am I reacting too much to this?
I think in the writers room they probably went, yeah, make them cousins, and then someone's like, that's gross. Second cousins.
Hell
no. Like, they're like, okay, we're good. That's enough distance. They probably didn't know each other.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, I thought that was bizarre.
Well, I do think it's something, there's a weird element to it where like rich people can do something and then they're like, well, that's just how it's done. But when poor people do it, it is like Lorelei was pointing out, it's like a weird, like, redneck thing,
yeah.
Right? But then they're like, well, they kept the bloodlines close. That's just how it was. Like, how do you think that all this money stayed in the same place? Nobody ever married a poor person. And so that kind of eventually, you're like, I'm out of poor people. I have to marry
my brother, you know?
So DC is saying at a certain net worth...
At a certain period in history, I don't think rich people are necessarily marrying their cousins as much.
Sure.
Right? So, Warren and Lindsay Buffett or something. I don't think he has a cousin named Lindsay Buffett.
So we're not saying at a certain net worth incest is okay.
Right.
I'm just saying that I think that there's something to me that's funny about Emily Gilmore being like, well, that was just how it's done or whatever.
Yeah.
And like also to all of their... I love all of the sort of like... weird rich people like waspy imagery, particularly in this sort of like arc with Emily and Richard and all that stuff. Like everybody's nicknames, like Chris Eichmann's character being named Digger, or like her mom being named Trix, or in the cold open of this episode when they referred to the one like her friend
Sweetie
that just passed away. Like where it's a weird thing where it's like you could have a nickname like Clem or whatever and be a redneck and it would be like, oh, you're a redneck, but if you're a rich person, it's like, we all have fun, weird little nicknames that make us sound like tiny dogs.
Also,
and we're incredibly powerful.
Right.
It's very interesting to me.
That cold open, Lorelai's like, what? You gave a nickname to a person? Your daughter is nicknamed Rory. That was my first thought.
But as you say, she views it as being derived from the name.
But it's, how does Rory come from Lorelai unless you mispronounce it?
Rorlai.
If right. Scooby-Doo.
Right.
Scooby-Doo is...
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for solving that mystery. I'm going to give my kid the next thing you say.
Guys, we're here to talk about the war on the middle class. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that is true. This is one of the main themes of the show. It's like the class warfare. Not class warfare, but like classism and the different struggles with money, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of ways. Who do you feel worse for in this episode? Is it Lorelai, Richard, or Emily? Because they're both... Richard?
Yeah. Emily.
I don't feel bad for Lorelai at all.
Really?
What would I feel bad for?
She has to go buy granny panties at Victoria's Secret.
But they do it in a way where it's
Please, Underwire Bonanza, or whatever it's called. I think they don't officially
Underwire
Bonanza. She does say at some point, she called to the store, she's like, I'm standing here, and they're clearly in a Victoria's Secret, but I don't think they could call it that.
Right.
So it's called something like... it's Underwire something. It's like Underwire
Rules. Lucy's Hidden Rules or some bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know if she was just being cutesy, but I think that is...
I really didn't like that scene because they go from like, it's so sad that Gran is dead, and this is how Emily's dealing with it. Oh no, underwear! And then like she runs off to buy underwear, and I was like, this is a real turn of events. Like
I don't know. I think there's something that's true about that to being bereft.
Maybe.
I think that there's something sort of like accurate to the experience of when you're like, when you're... as a family sort of gathered around because somebody's died, like, there's a lot of stuff that happens that's very, like, heavy, and then I think that almost in contrast, there are things that happen that are incredibly light, and it's weird that they're happening. Like, oh, you have to go buy
the
underwear for a dead person. Which I just do anyway.
Right.
Normally.
We're all prepping.
Yeah.
Wasn't it weird how much Lorelai struggled with the idea of, like, fresh clothes? Like, what does that
mean? She said fresh clothes was, like, new, like, clean clothes.
Yeah, just get her some fresh clothes.
Right.
I think she meant, like, she wanted an all-white sort of P. Diddy summer
like
Labor Day all-white party.
Fresh clothes.
She wanted to meet them at the crossroads. She wanted to look like Bone Thugs and Harmony. Her friends.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we'll get back to that, but... we'll introduce this next storyline briefly, which is a little clip that's also the tail end of another scene, but I just like the line so much I wanted to include it. So let's get into that now.
Glenn, you take Rory's piece on the new parking rules, okay?
My month last month, your month last 3 days. Yes, sorry, folks, that is my life!
Okay, now watch Miss Patty in the window. She's just standing there, waiting to come in. Look at that! And then she goes in!
Oh, Kurt, good, I've been... What are we listening to? Again?
Yep. Who needs to order?
I do.
Go ahead.
I'll have a chef salad.
Dressing?
Oil and vinegar on the side.
Crackers or roll?
Get the crackers!
I just love seeing Liz Torres waiting for her kid through the window.
Miss Patty, viewed at this angle, is monumental, shall we say.
I think I would say that maybe is a function of the show being in widescreen now. Yeah. Like, if it wasn't meant to be, like, the weird framing.
Oh, yeah, that probably was not in it. Yeah.
Like, there'll be weird, like, lighting pops where you'll see, like, a weird light that was never supposed to actually be in the frame. Sometimes.
So many boom mics.
If that wasn't it. What's that?
So many boom mics.
So many boom mics, so much lighting equipment. Or sometimes when the extras leave, we were looking at one the other day. Sometimes when the extras leave the scene, you can still see their legs.
Yeah.
Even though they're supposed to be out of the room. So, this storyline, which is completely disconnected kind of from the rest of the episode. Nicole and Luke are fighting, presumably, I would assume, about the 30 grand he just dropped on his lady friend. Oh, someone dead. Yeah.
Of course.
We really want this to turn into a Def Jam.
Somebody hated that. Somebody had so much experience with that.
Someone was like,
I did not work this hard to fund your weird platonic friend's kin. Okay? It was so real for them.
Oh my gosh.
And she walks away by going like, oh, is it our house?
Our place.
Our place.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Our place.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I think she's kind of justified in feeling that way. Nicole is in the right here, guys. Nicole is balking at Luke, her kind of husband, but not really, who's not staying at their home, dropping 30 grand on his longtime lady friend. This is justified. This is Timothy Oliphant. Bye. Good hosting with you. It was a good show while it lasted. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now let's talk about your social battery. Maybe right now it's bursting at the seams with energy. Maybe it's a little drained. Maybe you're one of those people like my friend with their phone battery that keeps it 2% all the time, even when they stay home all day. And they definitely could charge up if they wanted to, but they don't. Well, regardless of where it is, it's important to understand why it is the way it is. Why is the battery low when it gets low? Is it because you're feeling less social? Is it because you're feeling sad? Is it because of emotions you've yet to identify? Or maybe just boundaries you haven't set for yourself yet? Either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. This is so important because I've been in therapy for 10 plus years, for some would say, technically, 11 years this month, and it's helped me so much understand where I get my energy from, how I use my energy, how to better use my energy, and how to maintain things in a way that's sustainable and healthy and good. And that's to do, of course, with boundaries, but also just understanding who I am and what I want. And I couldn't have done so much of that work without therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's auraframes.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Sammy just left the stage for those of you listening at home.
Oh, I know. So many of these, I screwed up. So many of these clips are so visual.
Yeah,
and this is a podcast.
Also, I think we're all slowly realizing when I was like making my whole point about like, you know, grieving and stuff like that, and then I was like, oh, this is a live show. I should like make a joke or something. I like that it timed out so that it's like, get some people in here, live show, we're doing it. It's the one that's mostly about the grave. Right. Which I like. I think it's fun. I think we lock the doors. Let's just get into it. We're all going to die. Most of our actions are, in fact, motivated by our impending mortality, whether we're consciously or unconsciously aware of it.
Death is crazy. Get real.
All of everyone in here, dead someday.
You are all going
to
die.
Statistically, one of you will not be able to make the next live show. Oh, is that too real?
Is it you?
Oh,
is it
maybe the one.
Maybe you.
Did I go over the reds?
You know what? I'm glad. You know what? You know what? I'm glad you guys brought that up. This is a show about death and darkness and about the end of all things. And given that, there's so many fallen
this
heroes.
This is where we bring out Amy Sherman Palladino, and she's wearing a Grim Reaper robe.
With a silly top hat on top. We want to pay tribute to some of the other fallen heroes on this show.
What
so,
is this?
We're going to play a little clip.
I love surprises.
Fran, may I ask?
Go ahead, honey. Ask me anything you want.
Well, what happens to the place if you... Well, if forever isn't quite forever?
I don't understand, dear. All I know is that I can't sell the place.
Oh, no, I don't mean selling it. I mean, you would keep it forever, but... What happens once you're no longer in the position of physically controlling the property?
How could that be?
Well, if you,
The best part of this is you have a one episode to pull clips from of her walking around 1897. Where'd you get that number from?
That was,
Where did these numbers come? 2005?
18. Well, did I say 2005?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a Gilmore goof.
I think she lived for a few more seasons in secret.
I wanted her to.
She was down there with the WB Frog.
Yeah.
But that was, no, the 1897 thing was from a joke in episode 3 of season 2, I think, where she's, Lorelai says, you don't look a day over 106 or something like that. So that's for one person.
Yourself, again.
But we really wanted to pay tribute and honor to Fran tonight.
Again, the show's all about death.
Yeah.
And
death, destruction.
No, there is something, though. I feel like this episode is kind of... I was glad I watched the episode before this one because they feel like companion pieces. Like, they feel like they really feed into each other. And I do think there is something very heartening about the end of this episode because something that I feel like is a big... Even though I didn't watch a big chunk in the middle, like, sort of an arc for Emily this season is dealing with the prospect... of being like obsolete, right? Yeah. Like Richard's new partner is like, I'm gonna have this party, and we're gonna be in Atlantic City, and she has this whole great, I think, monologue about being like, you know, like the kind of parties and the people that plan them, i.e., me, are clearly like going out of fashion. And then she has like great lines like, "No, can you Google me? Can you like?
Can I Google him?" Yeah.
She's sort of confronting the idea that like my way of life is like going sort of. By the wayside and me with it. And then I like at the end of this episode where she's kind of climbed out of her, you know, awesome Tennessee Williams phase.
Her awesome
and pit. She still is like in like Lorelai or not Lorelai, a character named Lorelai, but Rory had like tied Richard's tie off the internet, which is also how I learned to tie a tie. I don't know, but any guys here learn to tie a tie off the internet?
Can I get a what?
The day after Father's Day.
Can I get Stars Hollow for tieatie.net?
And then, like, clearly something about how she did it or over the course of the evening, it just, like, came undone a little bit. And then sort of their, like, clincher moment at the end where they're kind of coming back together is Emily goes across the room and, like, fixes his tie, which I really liked. And it was this great moment of, like, you can look up a lot of things on the internet, but only Emily Gilmore and people like her will know exactly how that tie is supposed to be. And I really liked that.
So my question from that, that's such good insight. My question from that is, has Richard never tied his own tie before? Is he absolutely incapacitated to do so?
Well, he never takes the tie off.
That's true. He sleeps in his tie.
He does.
It sounds like we're talking about fashion. Are we?
I think we might be talking about fashion.
Fashion. Yay. Okay. Let's see that beautiful bow tie footage.
Roll that beautiful footage.
This was so close to a Jim Halpert look into the camera. I was really into it when I screen capped it.
What was, like, this in reaction to? Not having to go to the dinner?
Or something about, like, the snails that Lorelai had to eat or something.
Oh, right. I don't want to eat the snails.
Yes.
Oh.
So, obviously, on
does point, the maid tie his tie? Is that what we're led to believe?
But like,
because Emily said that she sent the maid home. So is that why?
Maybe he's just. I mean, reasonably, I think it's just he's too flustered to remember anything. So he's just like, oh, I don't know how to.
You think the death of his mom pushed the memory of how to tie a tie out of his head?
The death of his mom pushed the memory of the fact that he doesn't open the door for himself. Because he opens the door and she's like, why are you opening the door? And she's like, oh, duh, it was ringing.
Point out doors to him. Also in this scene, I just want to point this out. I think Lorelai's favorite superhero is Batman, because that pattern across her shirt is the Batman logo, I think.
It also looks like one of those bandoliers that, like, Machete wears.
Yeah. Yeah, she looks like Machete.
Yeah.
Emily looks great.
Rob Rodriguez has said that she was a big, Lorelai Gilmore was a big influence on Machete.
Without Gilmore Girls, Machete in space just wouldn't be.
Machete. And then you got this little pink number Rory's wearing. All right.
Yep, it's pink.
It kind of looks like, does it look like, almost like the stripes on her kind of like a tuxedo shirt.
Yeah, they look like ribbons.
Yeah. Again, this is three straight dudes talking about fashion. I don't know how insightful we're going to be.
The clothes are like crazy.
Let's talk about this.
Marilyn,
baby.
Also known as Reba.
Yeah. She looks
Reba.
She's Reba.
She is in my head.
I'm Reba.
I know my life is changing fast.
She's got...
I know the Reba theme song.
She's got like a scarf shawl with little flowers draped over her, some jewelry.
You have no idea how excited I was when she turned up, because not only was I like, she's not dead, but I was also just like, this is so different than Trix. I'm so like in love with Marion Ross. She's
oh, yeah. Great. We'll get into it later with
Lil. She really wants those bar glasses.
Yeah,
she does.
Super into the bar glasses. Of course, how can you beat it?
Like a sensei.
Maybe I Googled... this robe and tried to wear it for this show. maybe I did. I don't know.
I assume they were sold out.
Yeah. Yeah, because of this live show. And then this outfit makes a reappearance. This was in like 404 or 5 or something.
The Alice in Wonderland.
The Queen of Diamonds.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think she looks great. Although her hair, how do we feel about her hair?
There was a single
very divisive hair.
Yeah. Boo if you don't like her hair.
Now, boo if you love her hair. Yeah! That's the most positive boo
I've never heard so many people just, they didn't boo, they just said boo.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, boo.
Boo.
It's like, the ghosts are back.
Boo.
Boo.
Boo. With quotation marks around it. I feel like this was a very, what was this, 2003, 2004?
2004.
This was a very period look, I feel like.
Yeah,
it's tough to sort of like pinpoint this era in fashion, but I feel like this was very it. It was a lot of diamonds.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were obsessed with diamonds in 2004.
We couldn't get enough. Four and sides, then, 04.
And then this, I just kind of thought she looked like an ice queen or something right here. I wanted icicles to come out of her wrists or something. I love the blues. I love everything.
Scarface.
Scarface?
Scarface.
Like Al Pacino?
Yeah.
How?
Just lapels and...
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know what to say. I got nothing to say. It's Scarface. That's what I see.
There's a mountain of cocaine just off screen.
Not feeling that tie or that shirt. Anyone Team Digger in here? All right.
Which is weird, because I wanted to say earlier, this is the first episode where Digger says something where I'm like, that's very Lorelai of you, when he says that, like, I don't do consoling people, I just make a bad joke and it makes everything worse. And then Lorelai puts a Hello Kitty bracelet on her dead grandmother.
I do think they are trying to play him up more as a like foil to Lorelai. Like he has these weird quirks that aren't the same quirks as she has, but it's almost like she's forced to be like, deal with somebody that's as sort of like flippantly dismissive in an incredibly charming way, I think, particularly on Lorelai, of like so a lot of social conventions, and he's that.
But he's
and so it's like she's on is it's like is she just is she like is he like just her enough, or is he like to her for them to get along?
He's to her because he's her to the degree of like a serial killer. Like he lives alone, can't sleep with another person, has a depressed dog.
Yeah.
You think he has like a girl with a dragon tattoo dungeon underneath his fabulous
I think he
apartment?
Has just a solid white room that he kills people in and then polishes it clean every night.
Yeah. Next slide.
What's happening? Am I about to hit a hat?
This Rory looks like, I mean it fits because of where she is, but she kind of looks like a little girl reporter in middle school. Like, I'm going to solve the case of the missing parking
lot.
I think it's
a kicky fun look for summer.
I concur.
It's a hot summer look.
Hot summer look. And then, of course, I want to get into what Nicole is wearing right here.
This does look a bit Swamp Thing to me. It says, I just emerged. And now this?
And now here I am.
I imagine in the argument, she was like, I can't take it anymore. And just ripped open her shirt. And I was like, I'm going to go home and change.
She is about to tell Jon Snow that he knows nothing.
She, her code is like a Natalie Imbruglia song.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Torn.
Torn.
Yep. Okay.
Like we know any other song. Of course it's Torn.
And then, of course, Miss Patty and Kirk. Kirk's got pattern clashes.
Diamonds, I'm telling you guys.
It is. It's diamonds again.
Yeah.
Good grief. And Miss Patty killed a butterfly and put it on her person.
She's got like a Tiny Tim coat, like a Scrooge. It's real cold outside. And then I also killed the butterfly coat.
And of course, the one that's like on all of our minds. Of course, Shannon.
Shannon.
Love the piping. She could go be in Tron.
She looks like a soldier in Barbie's army. I feel like.
Do you feel like the costume designer for this show listens to this podcast and is like, is there any other department that worked on this show that you go through their work frame by frame? We're never like, oh, the peas were kind of popping in the sound mix in this scene.
The lighting.
I'd be furious if I were them.
Oh, that's our Sussus sound segment.
So concerned in the back.
And then, of course, the classic ensemble.
Why do we ever talk about Luke Street? He wears the same two clothes. And, like, they just flip the colors in post.
This is... Oh, you think... Wait, so you think he's wearing, like, a green screen shirt and they just change it and tint it to be whatever they need it to be for that episode?
They're just like, look, he's not changing. He refuses. He fits him well. He likes the blue hat, but we're changing everything in post.
Scott Patterson said, I'll wear one shirt, and that's it.
Visual effects.
I think... We should do visual effects next time. And I think
like the look of gum in this episode.
And then, of course, in this scene, I feel like...
Come on!
The gentleman on the right, it's a nice
shirt.
Again
with the diamonds.
And the lady on the left, like, very nice, very refined.
Very tribal African.
Yes. Like a queen and her subject. I think that's it for the fashion report.
Yes. And also, for the listeners at home, Kevin is showing the picture again.
The picture.
Clawing into... Royalty.
Yes.
Fashion.
Yeah. Wait, what did you say? Fashion. Okay.
Try a new character.
So let's talk about what I want to get into, and we touched on it a little bit, but we'll show another clip. And this is the introduction of a character named Marilyn.
There she is. Lorelai. Come here and say hello to your father's favorite cousin.
Hi, Marilyn.
Look at you. You look just like your picture. You know, your grandmother had this picture of you right smack dab in the middle of her entryway. You would walk in the door, she would point to the picture, and she would say, this is my granddaughter Lorelai. She's not married.
Oh, that's a terrific story.
You are stunning. My God, tell me you're an idiot, I beg you.
I have my moments. How's that?
And you, miss... Am I possibly related to you also?
Yes, this is my daughter, Rory.
It is a thrill to meet you both.
What'd you say?
I said that was a weird smile that Rory had on her face. You didn't think it was that weird?
I mean, I'm looking at it from the weirdest angle, but no, I didn't think of it.
Listeners, hashtag weird smile if you felt like the smile was weird.
Get it, Trent.
You are stunning.
Well, let's just,
my
I don't
God,
want to pick it apart.
Tell me you're an idiot, I beg you.
I have my moments, how's that?
And you, miss, am I possibly really...
That's the smile that you have when you're sort of being patronized by a relative that you barely know.
Oh, here we go. Okay. I guess
the yearbook
so.
Smile.
Especially when she's being like, tell me that we're related because that will mean that I'm young and attractive too. I don't think she knows how genes work.
Tell me our blood is compatible.
I mean, I guess so. Not to pick it apart, but that's the most hateful face I think Rory's ever made on the show, in my opinion. So let's talk about that. So that's the character of Marilyn, who is referred to as the family's Winona earlier in the episode. Mm-hmm. The one who kind of like steals stuff. And it's played by the same actress who played Trix, Marion Ross. So this is something the show does sometimes, like with Alex Borstein playing
really?
Multiple roles.
Well, no, what?
They don't do it as...
I had literally no idea.
Really?
Literally no idea that was played by the same actor.
Yeah. Oh, for real? No,
is that
really
true?
Didn't. Yes!
You really didn't know
yes.
that Marion Ross played...
Kevin, I watched so many Gilmore Girls in the course
I'm not
of the
taking
weekend.
You to town. I'm
I
just saying.
I set them all into my eyeballs. Rory was 4 when I started. Now she runs the Washington Post, for Christ's sake.
It's Boyhood. Yeah, but it was the same actress. It's a very theatrical choice. Just like Borstein or Seth MacFarlane kind of do multiple roles.
Not to
on
that
the
degree,
show.
Because usually with the other actors, it's like, oh, now they're a voice, or now they're another small character. But this is like right in your face. Like, Trix, meet her cousin.
It's like there's a ghost haunting the wake.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's almost flamboyantly weird. Like, yeah, we just killed her off, but JK, she's still here. It's like such a, and it's such a bold and ballsy choice. I imagine WB being like, what? And Amy being like, no, yes, this is correct.
Correct.
I imagine.
I would love to be so powerful that I could just send an email that says, no, yes.
No, yes.
And that's the whole argument over.
Right.
No, yes, yeah, ASP.
Deadwood would do that sometimes, too. They would bring, a couple guys died, and then they would just bring them back as different characters.
They had email in Deadwood?
What's that?
They had email in Deadwood?
No, he's saying the character choice. Okay. I mean, Deadwood right. and Gilmore Girls are very
I hit
similar.
Fucking reply all, EB. I know it's a fucking faux pas, and I don't give a quick cocksucker. People that have never seen Deadwood are like, he's having a stroke.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, you touched on it earlier, DC, the kind of nice arc of this episode where Richard, for the past few episodes, has been kind of out of it and not attentive to his wife's needs. And then finally, he pays her some attention by saying, you know what, because Trix specified that half her body be cremated and all of her body be cremated, one half be buried with her husband and one half sit on the urn in their house. And he's like, why don't we put Gran's whole body in the grave or whatever he says.
Right.
And so that's like a nice... I'm still here, kind of, mentally.
Right, just like Joaquin Phoenix.
I'm still here. That was a me joke, thank
it
you.
It was, but it was in reverse.
Demi, maybe that's why you thought that Emily was dressed like Scarface earlier, is because there is the sort of image hanging over this episode of a big pile of powder.
Right.
Although in this case, it's ashes.
First you get the sugar, but then you get the women.
Wait, the power. I did the Simpsons parody quote. Great.
Oh my gosh.
Good.
I want to play one more clip of Drunk Emily just because it's such
sure.
a... I just have to. Here we go.
Mom, there you are.
Rory, you look very nice.
I brought a dress to change into.
Oh, what you're wearing is fine. Lorelai, here. I just finished reading and I think you'll really like it. It's about this prostitute named Sugar in Victorian England. She starts rising through the ranks of society and she meets these really vivid characters.
Okay, sure. You don't have to tell me the whole story now.
I'm not giving anything away. That's all on the back cover.
Dad, follow him. Point out doors and windows.
Got it.
So, Mom, you might want to go get ready now.
Nonsense, we have hours. Want a drink? Today I learned how to make mojitos.
Mom, today especially, you might want to be early since we're the ones throwing the funeral.
Fine.
There you go. Go on upstairs.
One thing I love, okay, so the line is, today I learned how to make mojitos. When she was recounting it, when we talked to her at ATX, she said, I love that. I mean, that's the one where I say, today I learned how to make fajitas. She misremembered it from being mojitos to fajitas, which I thought was very cute.
Maybe she improvised on the script.
Oh, yeah, they improvise all the time on this show.
It's a big improv show.
Something that I feel like those of you at home are missing out on that I didn't notice for the previous clips, maybe he wasn't doing it, but Kevin does a startlingly great sort of Gilmore-oki during the clips. He was doing all of Emily's lines with the physicality. It was really striking. I have a theory, Kevin, which is that you are Gilmore Girls. I think you may, in fact, be the show.
I'm the show?
The show, yeah, you have...
The spirit
is transmuted into you.
Wow, I'm the show. Will I have a revival series?
You don't get so great in the seventh year.
Yeah, that's true. That was true in my own life.
Wow. You've been a
real diss to seven-year-old Kevin.
Well, yeah.
T-ball didn't go so great, did it?
No, it didn't. Happy Father's
Day. It's
really
funny to watch you like mouth the clips, though, because it reminds me of Amy Poehler and Mean Girls doing the dance in the aisles with the girls. That's you.
That is me.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Okay, so we have a few, we have a little bit of time for some Twitter Q&A.
Twitter Q&A, yeah.
That was fresh.
Gotta add a flair.
Carissa asks, would you guys be fine with your significant other not coming to a close family member's funeral, i.e. Jason style? Because he does say, even though Jason and Lorelai are dating, he's like, I'm not going, I can't comfort, I'm checking out.
Their relationship is so weird, though. Like, they're not...
They seem more like brother and sister.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, although that is a big theme of this episode.
Yeah.
I was thinking more in the sense that like they like their parents don't know, so it's not exactly it's not my significant other not coming. It's my father's business partner not coming, which is like whatever.
True.
I think particularly at this stage of the relationship with all of the weirdness about who knows what when, like as far as her parents are concerned, right. I don't think it's that weird. I think it's mostly weird because he made such a big deal of it. I feel like if it's like, oh, you have like a thing you got to go do for work and you can't make it, or it's tough to like travel or whatever, which obviously it's not for them, that would be a big deal. But in his case, he was so like trying to make it like, this is my thing is that I don't grieve. And when people try to make things their thing, it is innately unlikable.
It's cool so, and quirky.
So that was a little bit, yeah. In that context, I would be a little bit... annoyed at that person, but I think in general it doesn't have to be the worst thing.
Mm-hmm. And I would break up with them on the spot.
Right.
Now we have time for a few or maybe one audience question if anyone has any
audience
questions.
Q&A.
Anyone? We have one over there. Just shout it, it's fine.
If you were in Emily's situation and you find out that your significant other's family doesn't want you to be your significant other's partner.
Okay, so the question is, if I found out like the night before I got married that my parents didn't want me to marry the girl, how would I feel about it? How would we feel about it?
Straight up turned on.
Like, sexually.
It's never made two people further away when their parents are like, I don't approve of him.
Right.
You immediately become on a motorcycle when that happens. You don't even know how it happened. You're like, I'm suddenly on a motorcycle. Oh my God.
To the courthouse tonight.
I feel like I would be more attractive to them. They would be more attractive to me. It's never happened to me because parents love me, particularly moms. But
DC
like
Pearson,
if it did happen, I would. There would be sexual upside to it. I don't know how else to say it.
You'd have an awakening. Part of me thinks if it happened to me, I'd think nothing of it. I'd be like, nah, makes sense. Of course they don't like me. We're still gonna get married, but of course they don't like. Like, I'd just be like, well, I'm not marrying your parents. That's fine.
Yeah, I would collapse though. Probably like.
Really?
You. Yeah, I would because I love my parents. I have a good.
Right, but if they were like, hey, we don't like the girl you're marrying, would you be like, oh, screw you guys, or would you be like, well, why? Like, would you reconsider marrying her?
I would ask why, but I don't. It's circumstantial.
Mm.
I won't have to face that for another 6 months or so.
Okay. Oh, I thought you was that fingers crossed.
Yeah,
fingers crossed. Whoever's dating Kevin, watch out.
That's true.
Ticking clock.
All the time. Any other... Okay. All right. The last live show we did got weirdly personal about this, too.
Yeah.
I don't want to bring it there.
Okay.
That was a very good question. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are there any stray observations we want to go over before we wrap up?
Well, let me quickly look through the notes I've been leaving on the floor all episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you bring your charger out on the stage?
My phone was dead.
Okay.
That charger, Demi's charger, is very interesting looking. It's coming out of his phone, and it kind of makes it look like it looks like a second microphone.
Yes.
Like he's bootlegging the podcast. Kevin's going to go cut it together, but then people can get like the Demi edition out in the parking lot.
I sell it on SoundCloud for $1.
It's terrible quality, but the real ads are like, dude, you got to hear the Demi thing, man. Kevin,
he does commentary. He cuts out all his jokes and replaces them with better written jokes.
That's amazing. The idea of someone doing that is the saddest thing I can imagine. It just cuts to a different sound quality. Podcast. It's like, Demi, what did you think about that? And it's like... I thought it was great. You put in morning zoo radio DJ?
Of course I would.
Exclusive.
Gilmore Girls Gone Wild.
Exclusive. I wrote rich person name, Sweetie Nelson, of course. Not Sweetie as good Nelson. As Eunice Pierpoint Pennington.
Yes.
Which is from the last one. Lane at the Diner. It's such a brief scene, but it's great. I love Lane at the Diner. And I've said this before, I don't know if that episode's come out, but Lane at the Diner is the spinoff I would want to see.
Sure.
Lane and Luke's Diner? That'd be great. Anyway.
I think we all...
Can I say, I think of the young cast, Keiko Ajina, like, far and away most consistent. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm starting to like Dean more and more as the series goes on. Like, I was not a big Dean head to start out with.
You can't
and
talk.
About now that her and Rory aren't together and he's got a little scruff, I'm looking at Dean and I'm thinking, you know,
that boy
can really play a video game. Yeah.
I know the arcades.
I'm not saying I want them to be together. I'm just saying I like him more as a guy. But I feel like and all the other actors, I feel like got better and better as the series went on. All the other people playing young people.
Yeah.
And I feel like Keiko Ajina is just like great across the board to the point where you feel like she's almost like underappreciated because Lane is the jam.
That's all.
Shout out
Keiko Ajina.
Another note I had was Tobey Maguire would never play Doyle.
I see it.
I don't see it.
Tobey Maguire can play anyone. He's the Daniel Day-Lewis of our time.
Who do
not
you guys...
Daniel Day-Lewis. He's the Daniel Day-Lewis.
Wait, Danny Stronger's or Tobey Maguire's?
No, Tobey Maguire.
Oh, yeah, I loved him in Seabiscuit as the horse.
Yes. Transformative performance.
Transformative. Glenn has that line. Do you have that clip of Glenn?
Yeah, I'll play it real quick. Now
it sounds exactly like Professor Frank from The Simpsons or Jerry Lewis. It's like, Glavin!
With the Clavin. Here, I'll just play it real quick.
Glenn, you take Rory's piece on the new parking rules, okay?
My month, last month, your month, last 3 days. Yes, sorry, folks, that is my life!
With the Haven and the Clavin!
Glavin! Glavin!
Don't hurt me, nice lady.
Exactly. I'm consistently worried about how much Glenn is beaten down. Like, he's the Kirk of Yale, but in the way that, like, he's the Kirk of Yale, but he also is the Kirk that decides he's not going to take it anymore and does something drastic. And I'm just like, maybe give Glenn a break.
Well, we're running out of time, so let's go ahead and rate the episode.
Let us.
I don't get any stray observations?
You got any strays?
You get one.
I have a stray observation. Oh, I only have one.
Okay.
But it's long.
Mm.
I like all the weird rich people stuff. I know we were talking about it before, and I think it's there's a cool choice to cast Chris Eigeman as Jason, who I don't know if people have seen the movie Metropolitan, the Whit Stillman movie, was kind of his big like coming on the scene. And it's a movie about like all of these rich kids in New York, and like it's sort of in like a weird time period where you don't know exactly when it is, but it's supposed to be basically like the last winter that there were like debutante balls and like real old fashioned white rich people waspy stuff before it kind of like, I guess, sort of went by the wayside is like the movie's supposition. And there's a great line in the, I think it's like the director's commentary of Metropolitan that Whit Stillman says, like, people always praise me for this movie because they're like, this is such a great satire. It's so awesome that you're like making fun of these people and like taking them down a notch. And he sounds kind of hurt by that. And he's like, what people don't realize is these people were my friends. And I think there's something really cool to that, and there's something that Gilmore Girls does is, like, it's like rich people don't need more of our empathy or sympathy right. at all. Like, they definitely didn't in yeah. this thing, and they certainly don't now. But, like, I like that the show extends this amount of empathy to these people that live in, like, as everybody's constantly pointing out, basically live in a castle. They have this incredibly outmoded way of living, but I think the show kind of shines a light on, like, a couple of examples of people like that where they're sort of embodying what, like, I think mostly was merely an aspiration of, like, the sort of, like, kind of nobility of being like, I'm, like, a classy person. And I think that's, and I think that the show giving at the end, like, Emily this moment of only Emily can do that. Only Emily can, like, straighten that tie, like, and that she's having this, like, because she's probably, you know, that person's probably not going to live much longer. I think it's neat that it sort of gives them some dignity where it would be very easy to just make them like Scrooge McDuck, yeah. you know? And I think that's really cool. I love that. I think it's neat. And I love those characters. I think it's awesome.
It's beautiful. And that's one of the great things about the show is how nuanced it approaches most all of the characters on the show.
Yeah.
I love this episode. Obviously, it's a nostalgic favorite just because it's one of the first ones I ever saw. So it's not a perfect episode, but because I have such an attachment to it and because of all the drunk Emily stuff, I'm going to have to give it 10 out of 10 mojitos.
Mojitos? You mean fajitas?
Fajitas.
I really like this episode a lot. I like all of these episodes in season 4. I don't think we've had like a down episode yet. The weird thing about this episode is I think, for me, it took a turn where they were treating, like with Emily, when she starts being so flippant about Trix's death, it's not a funny thing as much as it is like, and I mean, it is funny for us, but it's not supposed to be her like letting loose and going, it's like her dealing with the fact that she just found out some really crazy, awful stuff this woman thought of her, and it's her like totally reversing it, being like, okay, then I don't care about her anymore. I'm going to be so relaxed about it that it's almost offensive, and I think that's really great, and I think Emily kills it in this episode. I think Richard kills it in this episode. He literally, like, I feel like we watch him regress 50 years just in moments when he's answering the doorbell and being flustered, not knowing how to tie a tie, and wandering off and asking for mock turtle soup and stuff like that.
Which, by the way, is disgusting.
Is it?
If anyone looked up mock turtle soup, it's like from calf scalp and stuff. I'm not making this up. Like, it is a gross, gross soup. So I guess Suki has...
Where did they get mock turtle from that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe a turtle was mocking
like
it.
Like a real fast turtle. Like a Mach 1 turtle.
I think it's that turtle's favorite... The turtle's the animal. They're not from Entourage. Their favorite food is calf scalp, and we're
Vince
mocking them
the
by eating it in front of them. We're like, we don't even like it. It tastes terrible to humans, and turtles are like, I'm sad.
Mock
for you,
Jerry
it's a delicacy.
Ferrara
for us, it's trash.
But yeah, episode is great. There's some. What I was trying to say before is Emily and Richard, top form. There's something weird about Lorelai's turn where she goes to the underwear store and then puts the Hello Kitty bracelet on, which is such a small line, but in my head I was just like, that's not cool, and it seems like you're not taking this the same way your parents are, and it almost feels like the whole thing of Digger being like, I don't grieve, I make a bad joke, she's just like, this is funny to me, I'm going to go with it, which is very Lorelai, but it also just raised the stakes of me thinking like, oh, Lorelai's not in the same league as everyone else in the show. She kind of doesn't care about a lot of stuff, which is fun. So for this episode, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 fresh underwears.
Perfect.
I really like this episode. I mean, Richard and Emily, two of the best characters on the show, easily. Obviously, Edward Herman is tremendous. R.I.P. Yes, exactly. To me, the Lorelai stuff with the, like, you know, making bad jokes or put the Hello Kitty bracelet thing or whatever, like, or the going to get the underwear and sort of freaking out about that experience. And another part of the episode that I forgot to mention that I really liked, and it is felt true to my experience, where Rory, who, as we pointed out, didn't have much to do, but she did have this feeling of, like, I went to the funeral and I found myself being actually sad, which I didn't expect to be, and that made me feel less guilty, so I'm weirdly relieved. That none of my emotional experiences have fewer turns than that. So I really appreciated that. Like, yeah. It's like guilt for me is not even so much an emotion as it is like the medium all of my emotions move through. Like guilt is not the show, it's the cable. You know what I mean? So that felt so real to me all this whole episode. I mean, I never had a super rich grandma that dresses like Mom from Futurama, but mm-hmm. all of the sort of ground level like grieving and human relationship stuff felt very real to me. So I loved it, and even though it's not related to this episode, I give it 10 out of 10 Kirk Jesus monologues.
Yes. Of course, from 407. So good. So we're short on time, so let's where you tweet, I will follow. At Electra Lemon.
Yes.
At DC Pearson. At Kevin T. Porter. Follow the show. Gilmore Guys Show. Yes, you know it. It's fine.
DC, is there anything you have to plug?
My novels are The Boy Who Couldn't Sleep and Never Had To and Crap Kingdom. They are available on Amazon or wherever fine books are sold, IRL. And they're also available as audiobooks on audible.com, and I read them. So if you get free Audible points or whatever from podcasts that you listen to, then check them out.
We should offer free Audible points.
We should.
Yeah. So
I also want to plug a movie that DC was in, which I just saw and was very funny, called Balls Out.
Oh yeah,
it Balls used out. To be called Intramural, which is a way better title and not less or not as much showboating for college kids or whatever. But it's very funny. You guys should check it out. It's on VOD.
Yes, check it out. It's awesome. Tons of great people in it, and it got a New York Times critics pick, yeah. which I was stoked about. I'm awesome. That's I guess
yes.
is what I'm saying there.
Guys, thank you so much for coming out tonight. Give it up for our guest, DC Pearson. Bye. We are going to be back here doing another show on July the 27th. So tickets aren't on sale for that yet, but you'll want to come. We're going to be doing the season 4 finale for that show.
That's the right reaction.
Recipes, girl. So before we go, you know what we got to do. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, we need to pay tribute to another fallen hero.
We got so many fallen heroes in the show.
Mom, you better come.
Honey, what's wrong?
It's Simon.
Girls by the name of Gail Moore. Oh, wait, what? Okay.
Thank you and good night.
Thank you, everybody.
Good up again for DC Pearson. I'm in the booth. Thank you so much. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.